right.
Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Tom Freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Go fuck yourself.
This is the ESE Fantasy. No, this is not. This is the ESE Podcast. Jesus fucking Christ, I'm on Mars. Welcome to Mars. Hello, welcome to Mars. I am your Martian today. Anyway, we're back at it again with another wrestling weekly review and breakdown of your AEW experience. And this is the post-pay-per-view week. Plus the week before the pay-per-view, because for those of you that don't know, last week we just did the pay-per-view review. We didn't end up recording a podcast because there was a lot of things going on last week. Well, sorry, let me rephrase that. We did record a podcast, but it was just the pay-per-view review. So,
correct.
Because we didn't end up getting to watch it in real time because there was, what the hell was happening on Sunday again? I can't remember.
Oscars.
Oh, yeah, the Oscars. That's right. Fuck, the Oscars. That's right. A memory hold. Anyway, you know, I've forgotten everything. But anyway, but yeah, so we were doing Oscar stuff, so we obviously prioritized that because that's been a big priority for us lately over on the ESE Fantasy Podcast, which I mistakenly mentioned earlier. So, hey, I fucked it up, but that's good advertising, so I'll take it. You know what I mean? But yeah, so for this week, we're going to be doing double favorites, meaning we'll have a favorite from the previous week prior to the pay-per-view and then the post-pay-per-view favorites as well. Unfortunately, for this edition, it kind of worked out in the way that it was not that hard to pick, but sometimes that's the way that it is, you know? It was certainly a lot harder for the last week.
Definitely.
But that being said, I think that aside from what we'll get into in a bit, as you mentioned in the notes, there being a bit of a snafu, you know, that caused a bit of a problem for this week's shows, I think the last couple of weeks of wrestling have been good plus solid is how I would say it. Like, it was really good the week before. The pay-per-view was really, really great. Post-pay-per-view, a little shaky, you know? And then I guess we'll get into all that. But yeah, Charlie, I mean, just your thoughts, I guess, and like, you know, did before you had heard there was something up, I guess, did you hear there was something up with this week before you sat down and watched it? Because I had. And so that kind of colored my experience a little bit, I'm sure. And if you didn't, did you notice there was something off before you actually found out? I guess is my question. Like,
I don't know. Not really. I didn't really think about it, to be honest. The only thing I had heard was the Toni Storm stuff, but that kind of, they broke that news like earlier in the day that she's going to be out, which, you know, we can have theories as to why, how would you be out for the rest of the year in a non-injury motion? Look, I'm not saying just because she's a woman, but you could probably take an easy guess why, right? Is there something that significantly that could happen?
Generally speaking, though, they don't, unless it's something that her and Juice are wanting to be private about, right? Maybe, you know?
But maybe, like, yeah.
But usually they're not private about it like that. Usually they'll be like, yeah, I know it's a pregnancy, you know?
Yeah, so maybe they're going to do something and they'll get to that or, yeah.
Hopefully it's not like a Ruby Soho pregnancy, you know? Like,
because we've had information following Wednesday that they're going to play into the angle, but she's also not actually injured, so take that for what you will. But other than that, it's a weird week, and we'll get into that, you know, and not every week's going to be a home run. But look,
you said it to me earlier before we recorded, we were due for a rough week at some point.
We were due, but luckily
we've had
Collision
so many good
of,
weeks in a row where, like, yeah, you don't even think about it, like, and so it eventually it was gonna
luckily
have to happen.
Collision was paced very well, and they split it up properly, and it was actually really easy to watch.
They were two basically A-plus Rampages, I thought, essentially. Yeah. And that was, I mean, we know how hit and miss Rampages were back in the day, you know, when you have an hour and you have like three or four matches you want to try and get through. And
yeah,
they just didn't do long promos in between them, which was smart, you know, like.
Exactly. But, you know, other than that, you know, it's kind of just a fun day for sports, I think, today. It's the end of the hockey season in a lot of those like European countries. And this impacts the Blackhawks directly because Anton Frondell is debuting with the team tonight, the number 3 overall draft pick last year. So, you know, and they've already gotten word from the morning skate. They're putting him on the line with Bedard. And it's just like, certain things with some of my other sports are really aligning right now. So I don't know, like it's
weird.
Do
they pay those European hockey players well to not play in the NHL during the regular season?
Well, so he's actually playing in the Swedish Hockey League. So he's getting paid a contract there, but he signed his Blackhawks contract this morning. So and he might not be the only guy debuting.
He was basically already probably on the team, but he just was going to finish his stuff up in Sweden.
They like
first.
To let these guys finish out the season there, get that last little bit of development. But unless
now he's fucking hot to come in. You know what I mean? Like playoff time.
And he had
so
a really good year placing him with Bedard. Like, dude, I'm so excited about that. And then Mo Salah retired. Well, not retired, but he announced officially that he's stepping away from Liverpool. And look. Not to go completely off the rails on other sports, but the MLS has really gotten back on track, I think, with getting a lot of these European superstars in when they're at the end of their career. They tried to go away from it like 5 years ago, but once Messi came in, and it's completely changed the game. You had Griezmann sign with Orlando City yesterday. You've had Heung-Min Son show up, like superstars from all different countries.
I almost wonder, I mean, obviously the MLS will make the first move. I almost wonder, could the USL make a fucking move?
It depends on where the money's at, right? But here's my hope, is that the MLS actually does bring this guy in, and we don't, because what happened is when the MLS stopped doing that, all these guys went to the Saudi Pro League, and that Pro League is just not the greatest to watch, because there's four teams that matter, and no other teams are like, so you can see where the discrepancy is, like, it's not a fun league to watch other than when those four teams are playing each other. So, like, that's the league Ronaldo's in, for example. But complete side point away, I would love it if they could bring him to the MLS. Like, so that's been happening today. It's been a fucking just, it's been, other than AEW, like, weird stuff aside, it's been a great day for sports. I guess let's just kind of get into all of it, huh? And you're kicking us off this week with favorites. And like you said, it's the double favorite, so it counts in our history book. At the end of the year.
Indeed.
Call us the Maesters.
Yes, the Maesters of the wrestling. Yeah, so we'll be jumping back to last week's Dynamite before the pay-per-view. And we'll be jumping back to what was the second match, it looks like, on Dynamite this past week, which was Speedball Mike Bailey versus Kyle Fletcher, a.k.a. the Longcock. Anyway, for the TNT Championship. And, you know, like, there was this sort of, like, single-minded sort of attack on the arm that Kyle was going for in this that I thought was really unique, you know? Mm. And I like the idea of, or maybe it was even Mike, actually. I don't even remember. I don't fucking remember it. But I'll tell you this. Mike was doing really good strikes throughout this whole match. Bailey, I don't know. It's weird calling Speedball Mike. I'm going to call him Speedball. Speedball was striking really well throughout this match. Basically, actually, you know what's fucking funny? I can actually really easily describe this match to you. And it's not like Speedball's been taking a step back. It's just in tag team wrestling, he obviously gets less time to do stuff or whatever. You know, he's only able to get his spots in or whatever. When we get solo Speedball out there, he does this different thing that, like, I think we all know that he's capable of. And he kind of hinted at this in his promo on Dynamite this past, or was it on Collision? Wherever he did his little interview where he had the title and stuff. It was on Dynamite, I think, because it was before his match with Mark Davis. Or no, maybe it was Collision. Whatever. Whenever he fucking fought Mark Davis. I don't remember when that was. But, you know, like, I'll look at it later and figure it out. And he talks about this idea that, like, you know, he has been spending his whole career having to prove that he has what it takes to go up against these top wrestlers in the world and actually can do what he can do. And now we've seen it a couple of different times versus Kenny, versus Okada, versus, I think he had a really good match with Swerve, didn't he, I want to say?
I think
and,
so.
If it wasn't, they at least, you know, I'm sure will at some point have an incredible match. You know what I mean? So that being said, you know, it's obviously really good to see him getting matches like this where he actually gets to show off what he can do a little bit. So yeah, there's this spot that people have been hitting lately, and it was Speedball that was attacking the arm, because he was hitting these, like, the uppercuts to the arm and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, maybe it was Kyle. Again, these guys are just hitting like this unique offense that you don't really see all that often, and it makes this match feel like special in that way. And there was this knee drop that was hit where somebody was laced like over the edge of the apron, I think. Again, they were just doing unique shit in this match. And I think that was one of Kyle's, like, not Kyle, excuse me, Speedball's, like, you know, the thing that fucking Tony Schiavone thinks is the ultimate weapon, which is every time he uses his knees, you know? And no offense, Tony, just, you know, figure it the fuck out. But, you know, Because I don't think he's actually, other than a few times, actually hit it, and they've never called it out. It's a really annoying thing about Speedball to me, but whatever, you know? Come on, commentary, get it together. But, you know, find out what the move is. Just ask the guy. Anyway, you know, and it's literally that simple. It's literally when he goes up to the top rope and flips with his knees. I don't know why it's so hard for me. I guess they didn't watch his indie matches. That's what I'm taking from that. That must be what it is, right? Because I feel like every indie commentator flipped the fuck out because he could never hit the move. But when he did, it was awesome, you know, like, anyway. But, yeah, no, I mean, and I also like that this was not Speedball getting a good match against Kyle, Charlie. There's a lot of matches like that with Kyle and with other guys where you know, and I know what Kyle can do. And we know that Speedball is capable of keeping up with that. But what's he going to do? Is he actually going to go out there and just, you know, basically put Kyle over in a way that's like saying, hey, I'm, you know, I'm just not there yet. This was not that kind of match. This tells me that Speedball is right on the precipice of being a solo champion in AEW because he had an answer for almost everything Kyle threw at him in this match. Kyle doesn't get put in this position a ton anymore. A lot of times he's looking like he might lose, but he's also in complete control. And then as soon as he, you know, hits that like burst of speed or whatever you want to call it, it's over, right? Mm-hmm. There was no point of that in this match. He was back against the wall the entire time because Speedball was giving him that much trouble and having actual situations where we thought maybe he could win. And I'll tell you one of the big moments. So he hits this Poison Rama off the top. Then there's this crescent kick that he hits that just fucking rocks Kyle. And the crowd bit so hard on that. So they're ready for Speedball to be champion, you know? And Kyle was obviously doing his generational selling here. I don't know what happened, but I said this got nutty when Kyle went to hell. I don't know what happened, but Kyle went to hell, apparently. He must have gotten hit with something absurd is what I'm taking from that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Ultimately, it's Okada that sets up the distraction to pick up the win with the sheer drop drain buster. Just what an incredible match that these two guys had, Charlie. So, I mean, obviously, you know, I've obviously kind of gushed about this match for a little bit here. But, I mean, what did you think of Speedball Mike Bailey versus Kyle Fletcher, Kylovic for the TNT Championship?
This is one of those matches that it was just so fucking stupid. Like, you're just sitting here just laughing your ass off, giggling because how much fun you're having watching it. You know, it was just they showed off their chemistry together. You know, it just makes it that Continental Classic match they had was incredible. And I almost think this upped it. Just a fucking banger. Absolute beautiful match. And it got you hyped for the pay-per-view that week, right? So just a really fucking incredible match of two of the best. You know, so can't go wrong with that.
Let me see. I'm trying to look and see. Did I pencil this in? I did not. So, okay. So, reason why I did not put this in as match of the year for Dynamite yet is because I might have to compare it to Swerve versus Kenny a little bit because that was pretty damn good, you know?
Pretty damn good.
So, but either match would be a pretty fucking solid match for your match of the year to just be a place, even if it's just a placeholder, you know, for this, because it's this early in the year, it's kind of hard not to call it a placeholder because something's going to happen, right? You know, other match will happen that makes you go, but that's always the case. So, but yeah, that's it's the fact that I'm even thinking about it, that I had to go check to make sure I didn't pencil it in, tells you a lot, right? So, yeah, definitely. If you guys are going to watch one match from last week that I recommend, I definitely highly recommend Kyle versus Speedball. And for this week, I'll be double dipping on Mr. Kylovic Cookie again, because I'll be picking up his match with Robbie Eagles from Slam Dunk Saturday. And it was actually the opening match of Slam Dunk Saturday. When I saw this match on paper on Dynamite, like advertised, I was like, why is that not A, on Dynamite, and B, like one of the fucking most hyped matches ever? What the fuck? You know what I mean? The Sniper of the Skies versus the Protostar? Are you kidding me? I don't even know if that's his gimmick anymore, but are you kidding me? You know, like, we love some Robbie Eagles here. Robbie, anyway.
Robbie.
Also for the TNT Championship. Kyle's going to have a fucking incredible TNT Championship run by the end of this, isn't he? I mean, it's already good, but I'm saying, like, when we look back on it, we're like, oh, yeah, that match was a banger. That match was a banger. This one was also a banger. And when his 15th match with Mark Briscoe was also a banger. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, like, it's, you know, it's pretty good. So there was a really strong train wrestling start to this match. And he was kind of like sort of laying the offense in. Something that I noticed, though, from fucking Robbie here that I think I've just not been necessarily aware of while watching his matches, or maybe I am, but I just didn't have the right words to put it into. The way he was technically attacking the leg using sort of like not really submissions. I mean, there were some submission offense. he did a Ron Miller special at one point after all the setup. But this is kind of this thing we see him do in some of these matches sometimes, where he's setting up that Ron Miller, going after the leg. But the way he did it, do you know what it reminded me of, dude? It didn't remind me of just like random guy attacking leg in wrestling match. It reminded me of Hechicero, Brian Danielson, Daniel Garcia, Zack Sabre Jr. You know, those are the guys I was thinking of watching him attack this leg because of the way he was doing it, which, considering he's in the faction that fucking Sabre started, checks out, you know what I mean? But still, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The point is, I never really thought about it on that deep of a level, because there is a certain kind of that sort of style of, like, it's a unique technical style that I feel like not everybody employs. So seeing him be able to do that with Kyle on TV, it's just a pretty incredible thing to watch, you know, at least in my opinion. So also, I thought the selling was so good by Robbie that, like, they were like actually biting on pinfalls. This is something he used to do in New Japan all the time too. Do you remember this?
He would
sell so well the move. People thought the match was over, you know, and they actually bit and just started getting mad in the crowd because they thought he won. You know what I mean? They thought Kyle had won the match, and they're like, no. That's just Robbie Eagles. You all just got to get used to that, you know? Like, he sells like a fucking best of them. So basically, this match was about just about everything I'd want it to be. You know, they hit every move that I would think they would hit in the book. The confusion of what the Ron Miller special was great, you know? And then somehow fucking Shivani being the one to know. And it must have been in his notes. But still, I believe that Shivani just knew that about Ron Miller. Fuck it, we ball. You know what I mean? Like, and yeah, it's just a really fun match. I thought Kyle, you know, he's on a generational run right now. I think he's, it's going to be hard to beat him a wrestler of the year. I feel like it's already a really strong start. We got some contenders, though. There's some people that are making some cases. I'm already looking at Andrade. I mean, Will Ospreay's never out. The only time Will Ospreay's out for Wrestler of the Year is when he's hurt the rest of the year, straight up. You know what I mean? So he could have a 5-match run in the Clontinental Classic that we're just like, oh, you know, it's Will, you know? That's what Kyle did last year, you know? Like, so, yeah, you know? I mean, Kyle had a very strong case for the rest of the year, to be fair, as well. But even so, you know? With that being said, though, Charlie, what did you think of this match? And then we'll get into your favorites as well.
Yeah, I got to tell you. I did really like this match. You know, I was kind of really wanting some, I hate to say it, I was just looking for some energy from the show, right? Like, I was, and this was our opening match. I was not the biggest fan of the previous show we had, and we get into this, and I'm like, all right, come on, Collision, win me back, baby. Like, in terms of Dynamite this week, was just wasn't really feeling it. And I thought this match just kickstarted the show perfectly with the energy I was looking for. Like, I mean, really, it's nice to see Robbie in this. You know,
Robbie.
Yeah, it's just nice to see him being used like this. And yeah,
he had a different look than when we last saw him, by the way.
He looks like the most Australian motherfucker ever right now.
Yes. That's so, why I was like, at first I was like, actually, the mullet's a lot.
He took a trip back home and never looked back, apparently.
He said, I'm going to be Australian with a mullet.
It also reminded me how big Kyle Fletcher is.
Robbie's also kind of small, but Kyle is a lot bigger.
Kyle was in New Japan.
He was a lot smaller in New Japan, 100%.
It felt like supposed to be a junior because he was so skinny. But when you look at how he's manhandling Eagles here, like, oh my God, dude. Like, I was like,
it gave you a good idea. This guy is actually size-wise closer to a junior, and so he gets thrown around like, I don't know, I'm trying to think, like when Nia Jax would throw around like fucking Zelina Vega or something like that, right? But it's just because, you know, Kyle has put on a lot of mass, you know? I mean, the last time they wrestled, he was probably a lot smaller, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no kidding. So that's a fun little touch. And yeah, I thought it was a great, really enjoyable match to set the tone for the double Collision, you know, the split right down the middle Collision. So yeah, that being said, let's jump into my favorites of the last 2 weeks. And we're staying on Collision, but we're going to episode 136, so the previous week. And it was the main event match of Andrade versus Mascara Dorada. Come on, man. This was worth the hype. There were people pumping it up, like, that went to the taping, and they were talking about how great this match was. Just wait till you see that main event, and it's like, all right, you're setting expectations now. And boy, did they fucking deliver. The crowd was going nuts. Andrade and his charisma, I mean, come on. He's won over the crowd. It was so on display. Mascara Dorada is just so fucking talented. I really, really... Last week was a really good week for Andrade to win this match in the Bandido match. he is doing everything I'd really... Honestly, I didn't have hope that he'd do it, but the first time he came to AEW, this is kind of what I was hoping he was going to be doing. So the second time around, I just didn't have any expectations for him, you know?
Just hoping it didn't go the same way last time, right? Where we lost him to speed matches, you know?
Yeah, like I thought he was really good at the end in the Continental Classic, but other than that, it was just such a weird run in AEW. And now here we are. It's just this year has been fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was so bittersweet because his run got so good at the end last time. I mean, they were booking him like a god last time before he left. And that's why we picked basically where up where we left off with that. He's not
And then
infallible,
they did the double
like
loser leaves AEW match. And, you know, that's how it went. And this week. So I thought Collision brought a lot of fun stuff. It's kind of what I've been saying. There's multiple things I thought we could pick from this. But the one that really stuck out to me the most was our second to last match, and that was Tommaso Ciampa versus Lio Rush. So on 0 Hour, say that five times fast, Lio was kind of showing off this new gimmick a little bit, right? But he wasn't able to dive too much into it. So on Collision, they give him an 11-minute match against Tommaso Ciampa, who's known as the Psycho Killer, right? And Lio Rush is putting on this new gimmick on full display. And I know there's going to be some people say, new gimmick, he's been, you know, I understand. It's new to AEW, right? So so when I refer to it as new, I'm referring to it as on TV and AEW. And he's showing this off, Duke, and he is in full character the entire match. There's nothing like this on our TV screens. I'll go as far as to say, we haven't had a creepy gimmick. They half-assed Malakai Black, but we haven't had a creepy gimmick since Abaddon, right? That was her name. That was the name, Abaddon. Or it wasn't Abandon, right? You know,
it was Abaddon, yes. And then okay. I'm trying to think. I mean, we could kind of say the sisters of Sin play in that territory, but not really.
But
you know,
they don't at all in the ring. That's what I'm getting to.
That's fair, actually.
Sisters of Sin, it's all outside. Tekla, yes, she does stuff, but again, brief. Lio Rush was in full gimmick from start to finish in this match, and he got the audience having a good time with him, right? When he's doing that gallop shit, dude,
I'm not gonna lie, I was literally like belly laughing.
That is the point. That is the whole point of this. And the crowd was doing it, and he knows it's working. It's getting so many views on every social media site of clips of him doing this. Duke, I think we need something like this in AEW. Not everything has to be the best athlete, the best this, the best that. You can have fun stuff, right? And this year, there's been a significant lack of the Outrunners. Danhausen hasn't been here in 2 years now. Like, as you said,
He's gone.
Abaddon's been gone. There's a significant Malakai Black. Like I said, they really half-assed it. Like, he really didn't dive into it. And
I think there's an opportunity to do something like that with Tekla when she loses the title. Like, she fully embraces the
and Tekla,
gimmick.
She's a total badass that plays into this like heavy metal gimmick, right?
Oh, 100%.
What Lio Rush is bringing here is something that is not on TV, and he can back it up in the ring, because guess what? When you have the ability to change your entire style to match a gimmick, but also keep your core elements, I give to you the gimmick he does when he's hitting all four ropes, right? What did he add to it this time? He started adding like the screech to it. That works. It just, he's going to keep evolving this. It's going to get over on TV. Crew, as much as we wanted it to be a thing, it never became a thing. I love the jackets. You love the jackets. No one else gave a flying fuck about it. Lio Rush is
what
so
happened to Action Andretti? Is he dead in Lio Rush's backyard?
I know. I saw Dante Martin post on Instagram. He said, "You see why we didn't want to work with this motherfucker?" Like, dude, that the whole fucking everyone should embrace this shit. Like, they all knew he was a little weird, but now look at him, right? So yeah, this is.
And let's
the black
be honest,
heart.
The way things ended last time with TK, he's a little weird. He's obviously got some stuff about him that's, you know, a little bit. Everyone's got a little bit of weird in them. You know,
everyone's
I mean,
got a little weird to him. But we know he can back it up in the ring. And one of the big things I wanted to point out, so he did all of this in the ring. He played up with it with Tommaso Ciampa really well multiple times, and Ciampa played into it great too. Because Ciampa, his job in this match was to kind of put over the new gimmick, but also, you know, you're Tommaso Ciampa. You're going to win this match. Like, you got to pick up some wins still. you just freshly turned heel, but you know what you're doing. One of the big things about this that I thought worked really well was the presentation. How often have we been talking about Tommaso Ciampa's big entrance? It's a beautiful entrance. Leo, he went first. Then it's the new Leo Rush entrance. It matched it. In terms of presentation, it felt like a true wrestling entrance. And
hey, yeah. I'm going to give AEW less credit here than it does, you know, because I think it sometimes entrance, and I talk about this, you can win a crowd over or lose the crowd in your entrance, straight up. Like, you know,
Bobby Roode.
Like, so I'm not saying there are some really good entrances in AEW, but I just think there are some people that just don't really, like, we didn't have this for Leo. You know, we did kind of have it with the crew a little bit, but it never really felt like it got there, you know, like. Yep. This presentation works. And so it's finding what works for people. And this is something that's going to work for Leo. And, you know, I just hope that this isn't like somebody backstage doesn't like this or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, thinks this is like, I don't know, something, some elitist attitude about wrestling, right? Gets into the fucking minds of people backstage and they don't let it like fully play out. That's my only concern.
And this is where Leo's spectacular. He could throw it back right at him. Like, this is wrestling at its core. Go back to the fucking very beginning. You're going to have people that get over weird shit. Right? It works. And it is a slot in AEW that needs to be filled. And I think, and to do it in AEW, I would argue you have to back it up in the ring. Like, I think that's going to be one of the big things about this company that you really have to do. And maybe some people weren't able to do that. Maybe, you know, with Danhausen, they weren't happy with where it was going in the ring. So that's why Tony got cold feet and just gave up on it. Right? He gave it
which
a
is
try.
So funny because Danhausen, if you watch his matches, isn't bad. He's actually pretty he's decent bad. In the ring. Like, he can do a decent mm-hmm. match with people, you know?
But we get to Leo, and yeah, I love this. I loved how different it was. I loved how bold it was. We need to take risks, man. You have to. Like, not everything needs to be... Not everyone needs to try and be the next Will Ospreay, right? I think that's fair to say. So,
no, because there's only one, and you're never going
to
be him.
Not every gimmick needs to copy that. You have to have different stuff. This was a big success in my book, Duke. And Tommaso Ciampa, again, I think he played his role in this match perfectly, which is a credit to him. Because I used to compare him a lot to Dolph Ziggler, and I still think that's a fair comparison for him. In terms of, he's kind of always perfect in no matter what role you put him in. And in this match, it was clearly about him showing off his putting over Leo, but also hitting his big like signature moves and hitting him with flair, just again to kind of show off his new heel turn. So I don't know. Yeah, what are you thinking about this before we jump into some news this week?
Yeah, so I'll be really 100% honest with everybody. When I first saw this Leo Rush thing, I was like, okay, you know, like, because I saw it on Twitter initially, and I was like, all right, well, I'm flipping it on. You know what I mean? Like, because I was like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? So I watched the match. The match was fine. I mean, they had a really good match, actually, even to be honest with you. It was pretty, pretty solid. But then, like, the actual gimmick. So it threw me off a little bit at first because I was like, what is he going for here? You know, my only concern is we're probably never getting an explanation for what's going on TV based on how he's been presenting. So will this be something where we bring in Action Andretti for an interview backstage and we're like, hey, what the fuck happened? I thought you guys were like boys. Like, what's going on? Why is he so crazy? What the fuck? And then Andretti gives us some kind of backstory of what happened, because obviously this happened on the indies, whatever this is, right? You know, so on another wrestling show, at least, you know what I mean? Like, so that being said, I just would like a little bit of understanding what's going on, just because that's the only confusion for me. It's like, okay, I get it. He's like clearly like possessed or something. I don't know what the exact idea is, or he's like rabid, whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean? Gone nuts at the very least. Right. And I'm just curious, where did that come from for him? You know, like, that is to me the more interesting thing, right? Like, he can do all this stuff, but I'm actually like more curious, and maybe that's going to be the way he plays. Like, we don't ever know, right? And so that's what makes it interesting, is you're always wondering what caused this. Where did he go to get here? You know, what happened? You know, and so I guess with that being my mindset, I guess I actually am quite intrigued by it, because I'm just really curious A, where it's going. Is it going to go anywhere? Is it just going to be doing this now, right? Is this will just be how we see Leo, right? Or is there going to be a deeper story told here? Because I feel like this is the kind of gimmick you don't just leave, right? You don't just leave it out there and just have them wrestle matches. I feel like it's the kind of gimmick you want to do something with more than just...
Oh, yeah. And yeah, this is a testament to... I'm going to be honest. This is how much social media attention this got this week. It's now up to AEW to be like, okay, let's capitalize on this. And I'm going to watch this going forward. Because if they ignore it next week, well, it is what it is. At that point, I don't think they have the right people that are kind of showing them like, hey, man, Leo Rush right now has a potential to do something that we've been wanting to fill for someone. Let's get him featured. Let's get him in a spotlight here. Let's do something with this. Let's get him on television.
You want to talk AW about- has had like a fucking apprehension with these supernatural or whatever you want to call it gimmicks, you know, like the creepy vibes. I'm not sure why, because like Gabe Kidd, when he says it in his promos, it's not creepy, but it's like it's in that sort of dark vein, that pocket that really part of the reason why I think WWE doesn't really do these gimmicks anymore is because inherently you have to go to some dark places. And this is not the kind of television that they really do over there, you know, like. To me, and maybe I'm wrong about this, maybe I just don't watch enough of the Fed, but to me, I feel like they want to always, the Fed wants to leave you on hope or happiness. So like if a heel lost or heel lost, heel won, like there's still hope that they can be beaten or something like that. Or like big win for a baby face and everyone goes home happy kind of vibes, right? AEW will leave you on a fucking terrible fucking situation for the company. Like, you know, I'll write up an example. Swerve Strickland becomes EVP, gives himself a world title match, and then wins the title at the end of the show is a thing that could happen. You know what I mean? Like, and we would all be like, oh my God, I'm so happy for Swerve, but holy shit, what does this mean for AEW? He's got all the power. He's become the super madman. You know what I mean? Like, so like, I feel like there is like this tendency to be reluctant to do some of those things because You don't want, like, Swerve is inherent, like, do you get what I'm saying here? Like, I'm confused as to why AEW hasn't done this. Maybe because it's a little bit out there to some people, sure. Maybe is what it is. Because, like, we do dark, like, backstories for characters. Like, we do these, like, I mean, yeah, think about Nick tried. Wayne's, think about Nick Wayne's heel origin story. Being beaten to fucking, into a bloody pulp and had a fucking glass mm-hmm. fucking shit shoved into his face by Swerve. That's his heel origin story, basically. I mean, obviously, he's a Christian Cage stuff as well. But that was his breaking point, you know what I mean? Like, where he finally just snapped was when he got his fucking home invaded, right? So, or his wrestling school invaded, at least, you know what I mean? So, like, yeah, what do you think? Because I don't honestly know why AEW hasn't gone there yet. Like you said, they didn't really do it with Malakai. They've kind of done it with Tekla a little bit, but she's much more heavy metal than she is.
I think Abaddon's the only one that really understood that it was an in-ring thing too.
Yes. Yeah. No, 100%. It's not just your entrance.
I just don't
yeah.
think they've, I don't want to say they haven't had the right person for it, but it takes a mindset. You have to be, just think about who they've signed. I mean, Danhausen. He kind of did his own thing. That's why I compare it to him. Like, it's, but you have to be able, like, it's either, it's a mix of Danhausen, Abaddon, and damn near like Bray Wyatt or something, right? But it, Leo Rush is really doing something original here. And I don't know. I don't, what he's doing is what I think you might have to do in modern wrestling to try and get this to work. You can't half-ass it. It has to be all or nothing. And we're going to see how that,
damn,
you know, develops.
I should use the example. Hangman Adam Page just lost the right to win the world title at the end of a pay-per-view. We can end on a note like that in AEW. You know what I mean? Like, that's something we can do. Like, I don't know that
all
that would happen.
All hope is gone, right?
Yeah. Like, that's a, we can end in a place like, so I'm curious. Like, so in my mind, there's a scenario where like we find out that Leo's like possessed by the Lord of the fucking, the seventh Lord of Hell or something like that, right? And like everyone, like the Young Bucks form like a Christian coalition to excise the demon from him or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And then he kills everybody, wins the world title, maybe not the world title, like the TNT title or something like that. And we're all like, oh my God, the demon lord has the championship.
And also,
what are we going to do?
It's a different type of gimmick, but a perfect example of someone going all in and never turning back was Tony Storm.
You know what? You're fucking 1,000,000% right. And it has benefited her career.
That's
so
like the
much.
Only like real example we can give of right now of someone that just said, fuck it. I'm going all in. And she did, you know? So, yeah. All right, let's get into news. We've got a few things to talk about today. Kicking us off here, they filed a trademark for the Continental Cup. So, you know, the Continental Classic doesn't happen till at the end of the year. Could we see a scenario of the Continental Cup maybe taking place over the summer or something, right?
Yeah, I'd be down for a summer tournament. The New Japan does two world title championship contending tournaments a year. Yep. I know it's not world title, but
so like, instead of a round robin, this semi, would probably be elimination.
What do we call it? It's almost like a lightweight heavyweight title, the Continental title, right? Almost kind of in a way, like where it's like a world title, but it's not, you know, sort of.
That's,
kind of.
They want it to be seen like that. It's just another singles title.
I know, but we have to give them, we got to kayfabe it a little bit. So, I mean, in their mind, that's what it is, right? So, yeah. It's like the New Japan.
It actually has different
set of
rules.
What's the one in New Japan that's like that? I can't think of what it's called. The one that I really like. It has its one tournament a year. I can't think of what it's called.
It was the King of Pro Wrestling, right?
The KOPW. It's basically the KOPW championship with extra bells and whistles, essentially. You know what I mean? Which is cool, actually. So, think about it.
This will be cool. Tony Khan mentioned in the press conference following Revolution that they'll be introducing Continental Classic track suits for the tournament participants. So again, this could be really, I love the sports-based presentation of the Continental shit. I'm down.
I think OC had his on during this interview or something like that. Or I want to say.
Oh, hell yeah. So give me a fun little, tournament middle of the year. Easy.
Should we get a photo of all the participants in their blue and gold league jackets every year? I think so. I agree. 100%.
And that it should be like a big introduction in the ring. I just do it on a collision. Have fun with it, you know? Okay. This is something, you know, we've mentioned a little bit about Anthony Ogogo before. Because, again, I think it's fair to say, don't know if we'll ever see him again. But it did feel like there was plans for Anthony Ogogo. Did it go off the rails with the Cody Rhodes thing? Has he just not grasped wrestling as much as, you know, maybe they thought? There's a lot of opinions
out
there.
What was the fact? He joined Shane Taylor Promotions a couple of years back. Like,
correct.
I thought that we were going to do something with
promotions.
That.
Yes. But he was in an interview with ITR Wrestling, and he revealed that he was initially set to become a part of Chris Jericho's inner circle. This was greenlit by Tony Khan. Jericho wanted him. However, Jake Hager ends up joining, and that kind of, he got replaced as the bodyguard. That's number one. And then, so he was also giving the inaugural AEW World Champion credit for being a real life learning tree. Again, we've always talked about how great Jericho was backstage. And then he went on to talk about, at that point, I was being groomed to join the Blackpool Combat Club a little later on. Before it became the Blackpool Combat Club, and it never really materialized. So I trained all this time with Danielson and Regal and put in all this hard work to learn. And he said, you know, the whole thing about pro wrestling is you can be who you want to be, but be big and strong, power moves. Regal taught me this as well. Old school British wrestling big guy, you know, so yeah. So basically, look, he's probably definitely had some frustrations over the past. Could that have all worked out? Again, I think if they were going to keep, it felt like when the Combat Club first started, they might recruit like two or three people, right? It only ended up being Yuta. So,
I mean, eventually the Death Riders really expanded, so, you know, like...
Sure, yeah, the Death Riders then brought in Danny and Pac and all that, right? But it was this idea of Moxley and Danielson bringing in the talents that haven't been, like, multiple-time world champions in every company, right? And that's why you couldn't picture if it was going to be Wheeler Yuta, Daniel Garcia, Lee Moriarty, Anthony Ogogo fits that bill if they wanted a heavy, right? So, I don't know, just kind of a cool thing to talk about. I guess it just goes to show, like, they're still trying with Ogogo, theoretically. Now, again, he is mentioning that, you know, that was back then. He's wrestling, and it looks like he did wrestle at the Ring of Honor tapings in March, so. But
yeah, I mean,
yeah,
we've always liked him.
Been a lot of stop starts.
Back on Dark, we would always talk about how he looked really good. Then they threw him on Ring of Honor for a bit. I thought he was good there, you know, before I stopped watching Ring of Honor. It's sad that they almost had him in the Blackpool Combat Club and they just didn't pull that trigger. I mean, the Jericho one would have been good too, to be honest with you. Like, either of those situations would have been really beneficial for him, and they just went with other people.
I still firmly believe Jake Hager was one of the fucking worst signings his company's ever made.
I mean, especially liked that guy. Know, he turned out to be one of those ones that now everything that he does in an interview is talking about how much he hates Tony Khan, you know?
Communist,
so, like,
Tony Khan is what he calls him.
Yeah. So it's like,
I thought that was one of the worst fucking hirings, because I never liked him in the ring. And like you said, now this extra stuff, it's just like, Jesus, dude.
It sucks for me because I liked him as Jack Swagger back when he first debuted back in WWE, because I thought he was really good. He thought, you know, he could be like that next Kurt Angle type, you know, like a lot of guys, you know. And never really materialized there for that. They must have seen what he was before. And then it never materialized like that for him in AEW. And we saw him have a couple of good matches with people, singles, and it just never, you know, it must have just been that he's so unbearable backstage that he just couldn't do anything with him other than just make him really talk about how much he liked that stupid fucking hat, you know?
Yeah. Like that hat. Okay. This is a funny one. So in 2019, WWE offered Thunder Rosa a deal. And she was on Real 92.3 LA talking about the deal. And they basically asked her. She went for a tryout in 2019. She kind of, you know, she revealed the company's offer. She's talking about how, like, it was a really tough time for her. And she goes on to say, I had a job. I was in the Bay Area. I decided to do wrestling full time. I was depending on my ex-husband and my hustle. I was hustling all the time and I was tired. Like, hustling after 7 years, you're like, man, I need a job or something. WWE offered me like $60,000 a year, which at the time I was like, all right, it's better than what I was making. There was a hurricane that happened. They wanted to keep pushing my tryout. It never happened, but it was meant to be that way. And that's when I decided to make the jump to MMA. They offered me a $3,000 contract. She goes on to say, basically, WWE wanted her to stop wrestling and she would become a full-time referee.
I didn't see that it was about her. I saw this fucking headline, though, and I was like, what?
So in 2019, they offered her to be a full-time referee, and the contract was $60,000. Which, like you said, that's good money, especially in 2019. It'd probably be a little more now, right? Probably like $65,000 now, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know what the difference between that and a wrestler is, too? I don't know how wrestling pay works for WWE. I don't know if, like, if you don't show up, you still, like, say you get $4,000 a week or something like that. I don't know if you still get that if you don't show up. I know in AEW, usually you don't, I want to say, generally speaking. Or no, sorry, AEW is the opposite. No, I think it in WWE, I don't think it's, like, per appearance, but I don't know. Like, you'll get your monthly check, but I think you do get paid more for showing up to work in WWE, I want to say. You know what I mean? Like, so maybe I'm wrong about that, though. The point is, that's not bad because that's a weekly paycheck. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Not weekly, but, like, you know,
well, I think every 2 weeks or something. Both major companies now, it doesn't matter if you show up or not. It's
really? Same pay. That's probably, I just don't keep up with what the Fed does because, so that makes sense. I mean, they should have been on that situation for a long time.
It's all salary-based wrestling now.
Well, yes, but, like, you know how that worked before where, like, you know, it was salary, but then, like, you know, you don't show up for 6 months and they start renegotiating your contract before it's even up. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, you know, that type of shit. Yeah. The weird shit WWE used to do back in the day, you know? But, like, anyway, the point is, like, you know, that's obviously, you know, I guess the thing that could have been really beneficial for is, like, if she was, like, you know, and she even mentioned, she was like, well, man, I really need to kind of get a consistent job here, you know, like, and she'd still be in wrestling. Obviously, Thunder had, you know, aspirations for more than that, though, you know what I mean? So, like, which yes. I'm glad that she did because we got to see her. And I think it was that year that she showed up on Dynamite, right? I want to say from the NWA.
Yeah, it was either that or 2020. Yeah, I don't remember.
It was
within
a year or two of that. We saw her on our screens and we were like, wow, I really hope they signed this chick. And then a couple of years down the road, they did, you know what I mean? So, like, it just all works out, you know? Like,
yeah.
Cool to hear it's cool to hear that WWE saw her as a referee, though. That's kind of insane, you know?
They got some weird talent scouts over there sometimes.
You know? This is the same group that was going to turn Adam Cole into Budge, you know?
Yeah. Kevin Knight's not good enough for TV, you know? All right. Claudio Castagnoli has signed with CMLL. He's officially the first AEW person to make a dual contract with another company. And, you know, he was CMLL heavyweight champion. He ended up losing that to Hechicero, but I think this is awesome for Claudio. He's always talked about how much he loves wrestling and, you know, CMLL, as we mentioned on our news last week with Johnny TV, you know, some guys, they're liking the work they're getting there, you know? So good for Claudio. I think is someone like him who wants to just wrestle as much as they can, wherever they can. That's a great deal for him. And CMLL is clearly likes him if they made him that heavyweight champion. So you know?
Yeah, right. And then gave him a contract right after. I mean, you know, because they could have just done the one-off. Oh, he's going to be champion for a bit, and then we're not going to, you know, we'll use him when we want to, but, you know. But they actually were like, no, like, we really liked what you did. We liked the work you did with our company. You made our championship mean something more than it already did. And so we're going to give you the contract. And I think this is good because it's going to set a good precedent, because I think that this doesn't need to work both ways. I think it would help to alleviate some of the pressure that they feel to get everybody on TV if you had people that were able to go and get work in CMLL and be featured properly. Is everybody that's not being featured on TV going to be cool with that? No, but there are certainly people that will be 100% okay. There are even people that are being used on TV right now that will be 100% okay of going over to CMLL for a few weeks and doing some stuff, I'm sure, you know? So I'm not saying it should be a cheap way to free up time on TV, but it can be. You can absolutely use this as a way to get people to make it. This is one of the things that Tony Khan can do for his wrestlers, is be a facilitator, right? He already does this with New Japan. He already basically got, I know Takeshita got signed on his own, but I don't imagine that Tony Khan wasn't involved in that process since he was still under contract to him. You know what I mean? So like, at least he was being kept in the loop type shit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So the fact that this even happens at all now doesn't happen before Tony Khan exists in wrestling. So it tells me he has something to do with it, you know? So, I mean, we had wrestlers doing this sort of a kind of thing like this, but it's not really the same thing. And what happened with Carl Anderson, right? He just left New Japan, right? As a champion. So, you know, like, this is a thing, but it's not been a thing in the past, really. So the fact that we can even do this now with these two companies, I would love to see somebody like Speedball Mike Bailey, like, I don't know, pick your favorite Flyers, you know what I mean? But what if Will Ospreay went on a CMLL run, you know? Like, I mean, what could that do for their profile, you know what I mean? Like, or for Will's profile. I mean, you know, like, there is a lot of things that I think this bodes well for the future.
Yeah. Okay. We got a decent amount of news this week. Keeping it rolling here. Wardlow was in attendance at AEW Revolution. I know most people might not give a fuck, but Wardlow is our boy. Wardlow. So hopefully that's a sign. He is hopefully going to be back at some point. I miss our boy Wardlow.
There was a group that he could join that I was thinking it would be perfect. Oh, the fucking Dogs. Duh. Come on.
He could fit the War Dogs. I mean, look, but he just... Come on. He just joined that Don Callis family, and I thought maybe, just maybe, there's hope.
And no one's gonna remember.
I remember, goddammit. Brian Cage is announced he's cleared for a return.
So yeah, that's cool. He's pretty good, so that's good. I think he'll be
more
still in the
Don Callis family, brethren, on the way.
I'm saying, like, I know we're gonna bring him and Wardlow back into the family. I mean, hey, fuck it, we have even more depth. Fuck it, we ball. 8-man yep. Tag matches galore.
Well, if that train can keep rolling, because Josh Alexander has been injured.
Fuck.
So, in Dave Meltzer's latest Wrestling Observer newsletter, he was helped to the back following a knee injury on the AEW Collision taping on Wednesday during the World Trios title. His knee's been bothering him for several years, and he had been aware that it would need to be addressed at some point, and it appears now is that point. As of yesterday, he had not gotten word on the severity of it, so we don't know yet. Hopefully it's not too bad. But the wear and tear, when you work that style, you're going to get injuries, and hopefully it's not bad. Hopefully he doesn't need surgery or anything, and he's not out for long, but we don't know the answer yet. So
you nailed it. It's the way he wrestles. Like, if you wrestle that way, it's inevitably going to happen. Mm-hmm. Look at New Japan. Yeah. Guys go get hurt all the time and just work injured over there. You know what I mean? It's what he's been doing for most of his career, probably. And it's like, you know, he might be out for a little while now. You know, Will did this. Brian had to do this during the... Brian had to do this during the middle of his run, remember? Like, so his, like, ending of his career run, he had an injury that fucking took him out for a bit, remember? Like, so it happens. It sucks. Yosh has been on a great run. I'm sure he'll come out screaming like the last time he left for a little bit of an injury. You know what I mean? I assume this will be a little bit longer, though.
Yeah, probably. And then Layla Gray, she underwent her ACL surgery. So she tore her ACL December 6th, and she finally underwent the surgery this week. She updated everyone on Instagram. So, yeah, she said, "I finally had my knee surgery yesterday. Everything went well. I'm home recovering and starting therapy tomorrow. Thank you for all the support during this time." So just an update there. Layla Gray. Okay. Timeline we have here. of Hologram. So he kind of gave an update on what's going on. He shared a picture of himself on social media on crutches with his face obscured by a fire emoji. He showed his left leg, which was heavily wrapped from the upper thigh all the way down to the toes. It said, injury detected, source, clone, surgical process complete, recovery protocol active, countdown initiated, I'm coming back to finish this. It's fucking metal.
I think he's probably closer to being back than he is. The way that he's phrasing that, you know what I mean? And also impressive of Will Ospreay recently. I mean, he suffered that.
It's been 6 months since he hurt.
Saying he probably gimmicked up his leg a little bit. He might still be wrapped up a little bit, but like it's probably not nearly. They probably gimmicked it up a little bit, and like he'll be back.
Depending on what kind of injury, right? You'd think usually 9 months, right?
Yeah, so a couple months from now, but he's hyping us up. And Will did a similar thing. It was like a month or two after we got the first couple of Will things that we actually got, like one that felt like, oh, he might be at the pay-per-view. Remember that we got that one on like a couple weeks ago that was like, oh, I think Will might actually, I didn't say it on the podcast, but I was starting to think, I was like, he might actually show up because like, you know, like it's, they've been kind of teasing it. So I'm so down for Hologram versus Clone when we get it, dude. It's going to be fucking literal Power Ranger battle.
Yeah. And then I think this is the biggest story this week. This is a fucking massive story where, so this information became public this week. We had Tony Khan, this became official that during, so this was first reported by Brandon Thurston, who was really good. I feel like Brandon Thurston was one of those guys that was really good in giving us the information about their new deal with Warner Brothers, right? And he was scamming through some stuff and he found out that according to his math, so it showed the four people that tried to buy WWE in 2023, TKO, Liberty Media, KKR, and a company named Base 10. The owner of the document read, the owner of All Elite Wrestling, a professional wrestling promotion that Playlink would enjoy significant synergies with WWE. Bank 10 is kind of known by it's owned by members of the Khan family. So according to Thurston's math, the offer listed in the documents was the lowest of the four. It was $6.9 billion by comparison. So, you know, Endeavor led the pack at $8.5 billion, and all that aside, the key difference was Endeavor's offer was an all stock deal, yada yada. So he also noted that non-AEW affiliated bidders got access to a data room where they had access to non-public information about WWE. But yeah, so I guess all of that aside, the big story here is ends up being like one of the big what if moments in wrestling history, I think.
Yeah, what if Tony Khan bought
WWE in 2023? And the fact that he had the fourth biggest bid. So first off,
that they even entertained the offer is insane, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it must not have been their decision, right? I can't imagine they would have wanted to do
They were going for the money, right? And Endeavor, how they did that with the stock thing and how rich that fucking made people, you know?
That's saying, I wonder if there was people that were pissed at WWE that he even had a chance. You know what I mean? Because I don't think they would let him into the
I don't know if they know? Knew. Like,
that's what I'm saying. I don't think they were involved in that process. I think Tony Khan went to the people that he could go to that didn't involve the people that wouldn't have wanted it. And I bet this caused all kinds of issues back in the back, like for the executives at WWE that were in charge. Because, I mean, I would like to imagine that he wouldn't fire Triple H, but I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What does that look like? What do you think a Tony Khan run WWE looks like? Do you think he merges the two companies?
I think hypothetically would have merged them.
So you think WWE? So do you think?
Yeah, I can't. AEW truthfully, I can't even picture WWE, what it would look like.
Or WWE becomes AEW.
I truthfully, I don't even know. I can't even picture it.
Would he want the name recognition of WWE, of being the guy that owns WWE? I think he would, you know? And then he would just bring all his people over and just change the style to be more like AEW, maybe? And maybe have some matches on the show that give the WWE style a flavor that's still there? Because don't even twist
me. AEWWE.
What would that look like? It's a fascinating question, you know?
It's a fascinating question, but that's kind of a big deal. And the fact that no one knew about it for like 3 years...
There was definitely people that didn't want that to get out, for sure, that even happened. I guarantee it. Like,
so that's kind of cool, though. One of the biggest what ifs. Who knows what would have happened?
Do you think he'll try again if they ever go to sell again? Or will they be too valuable?
He might have been
a
scenario where he literally just lets them both do their thing and he just owns both companies and just treats it like a, You know, he's got his focus on one, hands it over to the other. Could have been wild.
So, I don't think he would buy WWE without a plan for it. I think he would want to change the WWE to what he wants. I don't know if he would change it straight up over to AEW too, but I think he would definitely add a flavor of AEW. So certainly, there's two things you can guarantee would happen. Like, wrestlers like your Gunthers, your Sami Zayns, and your, you know, AJ Styleses of the world, they're going to get to be able to do whatever the fuck they want, whatever they want match-wise, right? That's for sure. So you're instantly, your TV match quality would increase probably. And then just probably there would be a lot less of those really weird booking moments that still Triple H feels the necessity to do, where you just don't do the right thing for the, you know, the person doesn't win the championship when they should, or the person doesn't get put over in the singles match when they should. Like, that would just go away. Those would be the two major differences. And I think probably most everything else would probably be able to stay the same, as long as they just stick to those couple, like the few, whatever guidelines Tony's giving them for, like, hey, this is what we do. We want to have good match quality and we want to have banging pay-per-views, but we also want to, you know, probably less focus on story, honestly, too. Those are the things you probably would guess, because that's kind of like what people would probably say, right?
Yeah. And wow, what a story. So
is it insane that we can even talk about it? I saw this headline and I was like, is that fake? Is this just something like some AEW fan invented? Wait, what is that? How is that even within 6 years of the company existing, we're already capable of almost potentially beating the competition? So, like, when people are saying right now, and I don't know if you've seen this, I've seen like two or three people recently from AEW saying it's not competition anymore. We're not the competitor anymore. We're not the alternative. We are actually here now. You know, I don't think that they're saying that they're above WWE, but they're saying we're on WWE's level. The fact that they almost bought them a few years ago, I feel like you can't really argue with that at that point, right? Especially because we've only gotten, AEW's only increased since then, in my opinion, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a really cool, it's a fascinating what if to look back on, you know, and when, where that all went. So, all right, I guess let's take a slight break here and then we will get into the meat of this show. And we will be right back.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are,
and that's who we care about.
Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
And we are back. Let's get into Dynamite here, Duke. And look, before we jump too far into this, I think at this point it's fair to say AEW has a slight problem with these follow-up pay-per-view Dynamites. And once it happens a little bit too often, it starts to become an actual problem. And I think now, this week, it was a little bit more on display than we've had before. That's why I don't find it a coincidence neither of our favorites were from Dynamite. Look, I think they need to take some of these pay-per-view matches and put them on the Dynamite card. Now you might ask yourself, for this exact pay-per-view, what could you have done, right? And it's just kind of the example of maybe you take that Blackjack Battle Royale, right? And you put that on Dynamite. That's a fun 20-minute opening match, right? You know, there's a couple things you could have done. Maybe you took Moxley and Takeshita, and that's your main event of this show, right? There's so many things you could have done, and maybe it would have brought a lot more spice to this Dynamite. Because, Duke, I got to tell you, even the one match that was like kind of a big deal, the Darby and Gabe Kidd, it was fucking just a weird match. So I don't know, man. Where's your brain at with this? Because at a certain point, the go home shows have been really good. That used to be a problem like 3-4 years ago. That's not a problem anymore. But yet the follow up shows, where they were pretty solid, they started to become hit and miss. This was a big miss. Like, this was a flat out big miss. So,
yeah, and it matters, because when you have a hype ass pay-per-view like we had that Sunday, mm-hmm. and you go into Dynamite and it's kind of,
you have new viewers here, like you know?
Yeah, no, 100%. There are people that watched the pay-per-view with their friends because their friends had it on at their house because they were over there to drink beer or whatever, you know? And they watched the show and they're like, fuck, I'll watch that. What channel is that on? Oh, it's just on Max. I'll watch that. You know what I mean? Yeah, it does suck that this is the case. I guess I haven't been as conscious of it as you have been. Like, I'm sure I've been aware of it, but it's just not something I've really internalized. But now that you talk about it, I'm like, yeah, I mean, this is actually a pretty consistent problem for AEW where, and I always think of that too. I'm like, man, I'm so excited after this pay-per-view to go see Dynamite. And I think a lot of me being hyped for that is what carries me on these shows, you know? And I'm like, okay, where are we actually going to go with any of the things that we're doing? And I'll tell you, like, my biggest problem with this particular one and why this one I feel like stands out more than others, Charlie, it doesn't feel like anything really progressed in this episode of Dynamite. Feels like we kind of just spun our wheels for a week, you know? So I guess let's kind of get into it a little bit.
Yeah. And we opened up with this Will Ospreay versus Blake Christian match. Look, man. I like Blake Christian. All right. I gave him my Ring of Honor Wrestler of the Year last year. I believe he's the workhorse of Ring of Honor. I like Blake Christian. If we're going to use Will Ospreay in this aspect, coming back to his first match, if you're going to give him someone like Blake Christian, who never wins an AEW, who never does anything, fair or unfair, I couldn't tell you the last time this guy won a singles match on AEW television. I honestly don't know if it's ever happened.
Okay? No, he's won, just it's been forever.
But that's my point. I think he had more offense than Ospreay in this match. That's the way it felt looking back right now. So we bring Ospreay back for this? I don't know, man. I never have a problem with this. But something about it's Will Ospreay. It's post-pay-per-view. There was no hype to this match. It was fucking DOA. If you're going to do this, I would have rather done it against Beast Mortos. I could give you 30 other guys, to be honest, but I'm just naming someone, right? If you're going to do this exact type of match, I just don't know what this was. And I was not a fan of it at all.
As much as I like Blake Christian, I think Jay Lethal would have given him a better match in this scenario, you know? In terms of like, Jay would have known the role that he needed to play in this. Whereas it felt like Blake Christian, it still felt like he was trying to do something, you know what I mean? Even though that wasn't really that, and which is weird. I don't know. I actually don't know. It's like, it's weird because I would want this match to just be a match the two of these you know guys would have.
If you're going to book it the way they did, it needs to be against someone that's really good that you don't mind losing. I point to Shelton Benjamin. That could have been the perfect opponent for this match. Because if Shelton Benjamin was working the heavy on offense, right? Will Ospreay, you could be the idea of him working out the kinks, like getting back on action. It's not believable against fucking Blake Christian, dude. He never wins.
Yeah, no, they've not built up the hype there. Even though we all know how good Blake Christian is, because we've seen him do good stuff either on Ring of Honor or on the Indies or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, we haven't seen that in AEW a whole ton. And this Swirl/Lethal Swirl, whatever it is, you know, like combination hasn't really even got off the ground yet. So that's nothing there. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
if you're going to do this type of match, I think they just picked the wrong opponent. And again, that's why I want to say nothing against Blake, but what the fuck? And anyways, post-match, Moxley takes the mic, tells the fans Ospreay took the mic. He bloody missed him, calls out Mox. He doesn't need a weapon to snatch someone's neck. He can do it with his bare fucking hands. Mox you to walk out, you to get fucking GG'd. Ospreay chucks a trash can at Mox. Pack blindsides him. There you go. That'll be a good match.
Yeah, that's going to be like a match of the year contender. And
I thought the video package transition into Ospreay's entrance was incredible.
You know, that was good. His comeback video was great. I thought that was, or well, rather him like hyping him. I liked that it felt like good to actually have Will back and stuff like that, because obviously it's been a big hole, you know, in AEW for a little while now. Not that it hasn't been, you know, filled by people that can do crazy things. It's just we wanted Will back, obviously, to do Willard things, and he did. And Pac, him versus Pac, I mean, that's gonna be legendary.
What about God? I just can't believe. Yeah, whatever. I won't go back to it. But yeah, weird match. Bang Bang Gang mat music hits. They come out, they have their max with Mox and Wheeler Yuta. Solid. Bang Bang Gang had their, you know, spots of hope, if you will.
I feel fucking so weird about them right now. Why are they not, why are they being treated like this? Why is Bang Bang Gang just there to lose right now? Like,
the easy answer is there's no Jay White.
Do they always need to have Jay White to be anything? Is that not that strong of a group if that's the truth, right?
The fact that they haven't given up on them completely shows that there's some sauce there.
Actually, I think if Colton were here, they'd be able to do more with them, to be honest with
Probably.
You.
Probably. It's the weird thing, right? It's Ace Austin, Juice, and Austin Gunn. Just looking for sanctuary. I think that's all it is. I think there's an easy feud with Jay White when he, you know, or with Jay White and the Dogs, right? That you could easily do. But we'll have to see. Yeah, Moxley hit the swingy Death Rider on Ace Austin for the victory here.
Ace Austin versus Clark Connors could be generational, by the way. Just absolutely. In case anyone was wondering.
Ace Austin versus Will Ospreay could have been generational, you know?
Come on.
Do you have anything from that match? It was just there, right? It was just a television match.
Yeah, just, you know, even having just had their ass beat by one of the best wrestlers in the world, Will Ospreay, they still beat these guys. So it just makes me go, okay, you know, like, you know.
Video package on the coffin match. Meet me at the parking lot.
Hey, the coffin match video package was metal as fuck.
It was great. It was great. Kenny Omega backstage after Revolution. Swerve isn't a danger to himself. When he thinks of danger, he thinks risks. So let's roll the dice. Puts a number one contender on the line. We're told by commentary that by virtue of beating Brody King, he indeed became the number one contender. We'll see if he responds. Gabe rolls up, gets out of the way from an incoming car. Darby Allin jumps out and they start beating the shit out of each other. And then he, you know, again, I thought this part was really cool. The pre-match shit. We jump to the ring and it's just kind of there. It's a lot of Gabe Kidd, character work, but it's when you think of these two guys in a coffin match, there's an expectation.
I think it was because there was going to be another fucking street fight on the show and they were like, we don't want to do
everything.
You know
what? It felt lethargic. It felt like it was just going through the motions outside of Gabe Kidd's character work, which again, why is this happening? How do we have a lethargic coffin match between Darby Allin and Gabe Kidd? I don't
fucking
know. It's a
fascinating question. It didn't really get going, like you say. Like
it didn't? How?
Which it started at like 90 miles an hour, and then it slowed down to like 15 miles an hour the rest of the match. It was wild.
It's just weird, man. Whatever. Darby grabs the mic after. He's going to hold the throttle until he sees God of the AW World title, tells MJF that he's coming. Well,
at least we're finally there. Fuck.
Yeah, we said following the pay-per-view, Darby, Andrade, they just both picked up wins because, again, we were kind of assuming Kenny Omega and Swerve would be fighting each other. Darby Allin and Andrade seem to make your best sense to face on MJF next. I'm cool with either. I'm glad Darby has this moment, you know.
You think Swerve will face, or if Swerve loses his title opportunity, Swerve or Kenny, do you think they face, like, is that, well, no, we already know it's Swerve's at Dynasty currently, right? So I guess, yeah, at least that'll be the next match. But do you think that, like, maybe between, I mean, obviously we're gonna have this next.
Well, they haven't
said
anything.
We're keeping our contendership active, by the way. Have you noticed this? Like, we had Swerve in the background while Hangman was on his way up, right? And there was the potential of Swerve versus Hangman. And now, if Swerve were to go to win, now you have the potential of like Swerve versus Darby or Andrade, you know, or MJF versus either of those guys because they're both already, you know, in that. And we already have them about to face each other. So, you know, that's basically essentially another number one contenders match if you really think about it, you know, like more
Correct.
Or less. So
I would love to see Darby MJF at Dynasty. I think that'd be fun.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen at Dynasty. Like I said, I think we already have that match locked in for the winner of Kenny versus
Swerve. Well, they never said Dynasty yet. They just said he's the number one contender.
No, they actually did. Swerve came out for his video thing, and they had what Nana said.
Fuck him. Change the rules. Swerve responds to Kenny, you know, most dangerous, yada, yada. So he just wants to be EVP. So if he beats him, he'll become the new AEW EVP. So that's kind of, they put that on the line, and that match is next week. So that's kind of nice. That's a TV match right there.
Yeah, and it's a TV match that's going to set up your next 3 weeks or whatever. Is that what it is? Like, yeah, 3 weeks of television to set up whoever he's going to be. Which, if I had to guess, I'm probably going to be... Well, Swerve hasn't really done anything with MJF yet, I guess. So I guess it could be either one of them, technically, I suppose.
Yeah.
Do you think it's more likely that Swerve loses his contendership or wins the EVP power? I said I think it'd be more likely to win the EVP power, right? And see what that goes, because it's more you can do with that, right? Probably, maybe. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I just don't.
Then what do you do with Kenny losing it? Does that actually change anything for him? No, not really. What, it's, not like he, it's not like he goes thing? And says, I want a title match. That's not what he does. You know what I mean? So, like,
yeah.
Even when he was a heel, he didn't really do that.
The EVP thing's weird, man. Like, I don't think, does anyone really care?
Well, it did when the Young Bucks were using it, right? But now the Young Bucks aren't using it that way. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, that's right? Basically what Swerve would do. He'd be doing what the Young Bucks did. That's what I would assume. So would that be even interesting to do? But it would be interesting because it's him. But then what does he do with it? He's already got the number one contendership. Does he need to have EVP power on top of that? You know, like...
Look, he beat Kenny. Let's have Kenny beat him this time.
Does that work for heel versus heel MJF? Like, I don't know. You know, like... Is that actually what's looking us in the face, and I didn't even realize it, is that it's actually never been Swerve because it's currently MJF, and it would only have been Swerve if it was going to be Hangman because it's, you know...
At least for right now. I mean, look...
Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably Swerve just Kenny wins, Kenny, right? Like,
Swerve is 1-0. Kenny beats him this time, and then they have their get back when Kenny's world champ. I mean, it could be that simple. Right? So
yeah, I think now that I'm thinking about it, I hadn't really considered that angle of it. I was like, I didn't think I wasn't counting Kenny out, but I was
Kenny's
just assuming.
Also lost two matches in a row, so mm-hmm. I
he could lose another one. Yeah,
or I don't think Kenny's gonna lose this match next week.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking about it all wrong because I just assumed Swerve was the next contender because they declared it. But then I'm like, you know what? They might have just set this up with the Dynasty thing just so that we can lock Kenny in for Dynasty. That might have been the reason why, you know? Yeah. So that might be it. That might have been the reason why. Hey, it's cool to me. I don't care. Whatever we got to do. None of this even matters. We could announce next week that there's an 8-man fucking title match for the fucking championship at the pay-per-view. So, you know, and we'd all just be like, well, that was unexpected. But sure, you know, like if it was 8 good people, you know, like.
Yeah.
So.
Renee was backstage with Speedball.
Speedball.
Some people you look at, they're like a star like Kevin Knight, but Bayley himself had to scratch and claw to get folks believe in him. The mental toughness brings up people like Omega, started from nothing, fought his way to the top of AEW. It's that kind of heart that makes Bayley believe in himself to be a winner. And he goes out there and beats the crap out of Mark Davis and picks up a fun win in a week of Speedball dubs, you know?
Speedball.
A spinning corner kick into the ultimate weapon for the win. This is a fun little match. I like this match. Showing off his Trios championship.
A Trios wrestler actually going around with the championship and wrestling. Crazy. It's a crazy concept, you know?
MJF preview. He's going to Disney World. Gives a bloody kiss to the camera. Fair to say, it's not a shock we didn't see MJF or Hangman following that match. Okada and Vice are backstage laughing at the Bucks and Perry. And I believe... Don Callis.
Okada is literally like a cartoon villain, bro. It's awesome. Like,
yeah, it's pretty great. Okay. And then we jumped into Marina Shafir versus Mina Shirakawa. And this was a no holds barred match. And Mina Shirakawa was a substitute following the murder mystery angle of Tony Storm.
Tony Storm found dead.
Yeah. Fun little story there. And this is my favorite match of the night. I thought this was really good. This was a big win for Mina. You know, I if she can slot into the spot of Toni Storm, you know, and maybe that could have been her partner, right? That was her tag partner. If she can get these wins and get big wins, it's weird, right? Mina's, I feel like, towards the top of the AEW women's division, she never really wins. So
both
it's like
times she faced or maybe she faced her like two or three times for the TBS champion. We thought she was going to be the one to take it off of fucking Mercedes so that she could go after the world title, and it never happened. It felt like it was so easy, and it just never pulled that trigger. Maybe they will this time. Maybe she'll beat Willow or something like that, or maybe she'll beat.
Yeah, she always feels like she's towards the top but wasn't winning. And I actually really like this match. Marina Shafir, wow, I got to tell you, she's fucking really cooking. She's doing some good shit in the ring, and I really liked this match. And, you know, the Storm Zero wasn't perfect at the end, but I kind of like her using it. So, you know, I'm sure we'll see that develop.
It's like
a couple
night and
times.
Day from when her and Jessamine Duke were wrestling like 2 minute time tag matches on NXT Black and Gold. You know what I mean?
Correct. So, yeah. What'd you think of this one? This is a good match. Honestly, match of the night.
Yeah. I think I was really surprised, to be honest with you. Not that I didn't think they'd get there, but it was just so slapped together. I was like, what are they going to be able to fucking pull off here, you know? But that's just credit to both of the ladies here, because they both really put on some really good stuff. I think Mina has, like you said, an opportunity to actually do something here with this, now that they had to pivot like this. I'm not sure if I even want to just slot her into someone else's story. I say just pivot, do something different with her, and like I said, either TBS or world title aspirations. Maybe she doesn't win them still.
Fucking wins for her.
But yeah, book her some big wins and some matches, because we know what she can do in the ring. So we know it's not like it's going to be a step down at all for anybody to have to go up against her. Like, I'm thinking of a couple of opponents. Like, Stat just came off some big losses. So, you know, again, I don't know that I want Stat to lose to her again. But if you're trying to set up Stat to come back with another big comeback, that would be another way to do it. Losing to a legit star like Mina on the way up to her next run, that wouldn't be a terrible thing. And that sets up a future match if she wins anything, right? So, you know, Thunder is kind of loose right now. She could do some stuff with her, you know? We have, we have a lot of women in the women's division. Like I said, Willow would be a phenomenal opponent for her right now, even if Willow were to win that match. You know what I mean? So, like,
oh my God, yeah.
So, you know, there's like eons of possibilities. You could throw her against Lina Cross, even though she's not going for the tag titles right now, just to give Lina some tingles. You know what I mean? Like, you have a lot of options available to you with Mina. And I'm actually kind of glad that she gets this good match here. The Plunder was afoot. It was pretty fun, you know? Like,
yeah.
Hard I like agree. That Marina is now getting that respect, where we just throw her into these situations. We don't even think about it. And we're like, yeah, no, she's going to do well. And she did. She pivoted the match and she still figured it out. That tells me everything. She's good. Correct. She knows what she's doing. You know, like,
I can see her as a singles champion now. I could see her with that TBS title.
She could
title.
Take that off Willow, dude. If Willow is going to do anything with that title, if she's going to be hard focused on those tag titles, then she should have some consequences for that, bro. She should lose that title. Not because she's not like out of some sort of vindictive like wrestling fan spite. I mean, like, if she's literally in story in kayfabe not focusing on that title, then she should fucking, there should be consequences for that. Like,
yeah. And look, then we had our main event match of the evening with the newly crowned national champion Jungle Jack Perry and the Young Bucks versus Okada and Trent Beretta and Rocky Romero. This was solid. Yeah, that's kind of been the story of the night for me. You know, solid stuff, but also could have been better. And unfortunately, just had a hard time really getting myself sinking my teeth into this one. I just, outside of Matt and Nick, who were playing up their injuries from the night before. Well, I mean, you know what I mean? The weekend. Okada looked pretty good, but everyone else looked fucking like hobbled, man. I don't know what to do with that. So whatever. Who the fuck even won? Jack Perry won with Okada. So Jack Perry and the Young Bucks won. Copen Cage came out, cut a little promo, and then FTR came out and they challenged him at Dynasty. So yeah, it's, you know, nothing too special from the ending here. They're not going by Copen Cage. They're going by Cage and Cope. Come on, man. Copen Cage.
Oh, my bad. This is where I got confused. They said they were the contenders, but I'm pretty sure, like, the implication, because how close we are to Dynasty, is I don't think Swerve is getting the title shot, like, 2 weeks from now. You know what I mean? Like, that's just my brain assuming that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty sure they're deciding the contender for Dynasty next week is what I'm getting at, you know? Like, is what I'm saying. If not, it'd be really funny if it was, like, Kenny Omega versus MJF Dynamite next week. I'd be down, but I'd be like, why can't Kenny get the shot against MJF on the pay, man? What the hell?
Come on, Kenny.
He won't wrestle him on the pay-per-view. He's not pay-per-view material, MJF. So.
Fuck it. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of it. Let's jump into the rest of the collision here that you got for us.
Slam Dunk Saturday. So I technically have two shows to review, I guess, but you know, whatever. We talked about Robbie versus Kyle. And then we had a backstage little promo with Mox and Puck, and they're basically, Mox is like, look, man, I you know, you must have, like, he didn't say this, but I'm paraphrasing, you got like a death wish or something, man. Like, I was the one that broke your neck. You want me to do it again? Like, I'll put you back in the hospital, man. Like, I'm not worried about it. You got like some kind of issue, man. And then Pac's like, I don't even know what your beef is with me, man, but you know, we've been chasing each other our whole careers. I'm down to go at it one more time. So if you want it, if you want the smoke, we will go. So that match is going to slap. So, you know, just good stuff from both of those guys backstage. You know, they're both pretty good on the mic. I wish we used, again, I always say this every time we use Pac. I wish he got to cut promos more, because he's actually really fucking good at it. You know, like,
yeah,
but you know, when we use him, you know, I'm sure he's happy because he gets to travel back and forth like as he clearly wants to and not have to be on TV every week, but also still get to be a pretty main featured thing on the show. Like, it's pretty cool. La Facción Ingobernable, that being Dralístico Rouge and Beast Morthos. We just talked about him earlier and he fucking almost slipped my mind. Took on three jobbers in paradise and they beat the fuck out of them and it did not last very long. That happened a couple of times across these two 1 hour shows, you know, but it is what it is. Tekla backstage basically saying like no one's on her level, no one's toxic enough to be with her, like, you know, to bop with her. I don't believe there was any implication of a new contender here, so I probably won't get to that till next week. Do you think you have any idea who you think is going to go on to face Tekla at the pay-per-view, Charlie?
Someone that's been winning. I mean,
it could be because we don't know that off the top of our head. It's just going to be a multi-woman, like we've had like the four ways before.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I just guess fucking
could be Mina
right now just because she won. That's it. That's all I got. I don't even know.
We got a couple weeks to set it up, so maybe Mina picks up a couple wins and then maybe Tekla calls out Mina.
Let's put together a tournament for her, huh?
Hmm?
Let's put together a tournament for her.
That would be good. Why not?
Easy booking there.
Yeah. I could totally see that working. We go straight from this into the Sisters of Sin taking on the Brawling Birds. I still think the Birds have eons of potential. Especially, and I think this is where you really would get the most out of them right now, put them in a long-term story against the Divine Dominion, because that would work a lot, and they would have really good matches with each other. I think like how like Bang Bang Gang, when they first formed, it was just Jay White and the Guns versus FTR when they were going, you know, like, and that was like every week was like a fucking incredible match between those two. Like, you could do that with Brawling Birds and Divine, I think. So
you definitely could, and they could really do some beautiful stuff for this title. And you know what? You just really put something in my brain.
Hmm.
We haven't set up a contender for that title.
We haven't. No. Yeah. Well, disaster. Kind of. We did later on. So, which is annoying. But I think they'll actually be next week. I'm not actually sure if that's going to be at the pay per view. So, but the next contenders will be Babes again. We did find that out.
I'm saying for Tekla.
Oh, for Tekla. Yeah, I actually don't know. Yeah, where are you going with this?
This is a project of the last like 7 weeks. It's been, well, we're going to do this Thunder Rosa thing and just to throw it away. And then it's just Statlander, but we don't let anyone else get singles matches in the meantime. This is a direct correlation of that happening. That's fucked. Oh my God. I didn't even think about that. But when you're like, yeah, who could be the next contender? Dude, it's like throwing a fucking shit at the wall. Who knows? Megan Bain probably should be, but like,
yeah, realistically, she probably won the most matches recently or something, right?
Oh
yeah,
my God, man.
Wow, that's crazy.
Just bring Mercedes back then. Fuck this.
Yeah, no, put it on Mercedes, honestly. Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, I just let her fucking, you know, put over Tekla.
I don't need Tekla to beat Mercedes. Mercedes has lost too many world title matches. If she loses three in a row, take her out of that division, dude. I'm sorry. Like, honestly, straight up, like,
put her in Ring of Khan.
No. Put her in the TBS title division where she clearly can only fucking win. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you can't have her lose three title matches in a row for the world title, that's insane. Like, and two fucking tag team title matches? Are you fucking kidding me? No. Like, no fucking no way.
Yeah, they need to do something.
Think about that. The last, like, five things Mercedes has tried to do, she fucking did not successfully do. Like, it's not looking good. And I'm not saying that matters, but, like, you know, at some point she's got to pick up a big win, right? Like,
yeah, well, she's done with her losing streak. She'll get back on track.
Yeah, back on track to the TBS Championship. Anyway, I'm kidding. So we had an MJF video package. I think we've showed this a couple of different times. It's just like kind of like the cutting together the stuff that he said post-match with some of the stuff from the pre-match, I think, basically from him. Mm-hmm. It's basically recapping the match / post-match stuff. It's just MJF not on the show, so we're going to keep our world champion on the show. All right, we had Commander and Mascara Dorada, which that's a fun tag team, but like I think Commander had some new music here, which was interesting. Or at least I don't remember this music if he had it already, to be honest with you. So that was pretty cool. I mean, to be honest, a lot of times when we've been using him recently, I don't feel like he's been coming out to his music. He's either been coming out to either if he was in a trio or a duo, he's been coming out to the other person's music. So I don't know, but pretty cool to me. I don't know. That sounded pretty good. So, and they took on Claudio Castagnoli and Daniel Garcia here. The Lucha Boys were doing some good flippy things. There was this really, really fun spot where they hit like a double rope walk into a stereo moonsault. And they hit, you know, they did the gay holding hands part too. Anyway, But, you know, anyway. No, I'm just kidding. No, that added actually 10 points of damage, if you didn't know. Anyway, it's the way that it works, you know. But, yeah, this was also our main event for the first two of these shows. Claudio was manhandling, pummeling people. Danny with the intelligent dissection of his opponents with, like, you know, submissions and technical wrestling. And the Death Riders ended up picking up the win here. I think it was, like, a gotch neutralizer or something like that. And, yeah, it was a solid little match here, you know. I don't know, was there anything you wanted to add about this? It was a solid little, like, you know, half-show main event, I guess, if you want to call it that. And then, like,
yeah,
you know, had some solid wrestlers in it. They mentioned this is where we first hear that CMLL championship had, you know, Claudio had lost it to Hechicero, at least on AWTV is the first time I heard it. So
it was a sick fucking pile driver from Claudio onto Commander at one point.
Yeah, I mean, Claudio is pretty fucking good, you know. So reason why him and versus Eddie Kingston went so hard, you know. God, speaking of Eddie Kingston, where the fuck has that guy been? Oh my god. No, surely we haven't lost him already. He didn't get hurt, did he? Fuck.
There's not enough time on TV.
Maybe he can go to CMLL. Would they want him? I wonder. I wonder what he would do in a place like CMLL or New Japan. I mean,
you know what I'm still, yeah. So let's say New Japan.
Send him to Japan, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
That's where I'm at. I'd
put him in the G1.
I'd love to see him do the G1 and just do like maybe a tag thing over there with Ortiz.
Oh, yeah, him and Ortiz in the tag tournament. That's really easily. They don't even have to be a super contending team. They could just be like the team that spoils a bunch of other teams, you know, runs. That could be fun. Yeah, this is where we heard that we're on to Slam Dunk Sunday now, which we opened up with freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy and Roderick Strong taking on Jay Lethal and Lee Johnson. Like I always mention, I always love to see Jay Lethal get featured because, you know, I always loved Jay Lethal back in the day. And it's been unfortunate that there's never really been a spot for him to really do anything in AEW. Hopefully this world, Lethal Swirl, is that's going to be it because that could benefit Lee Johnson, obviously, and Blake Christian both, obviously. OC continuing to get his ass beat in these matches. Roddy with the big spot saving the day. I will say this. It does seem like the Swirl do want it, you know? Like, Blake Christian obviously didn't give it. Was put in a pretty tough position on Dynamite. But I do think they actually are. They do seem to want this shit. You know what I mean? They do want to act. They're not just, like, fucking spinning their wheels because they're, now we're Jay Lethal. Like, they're actually trying to do something. You know what I mean? I don't know if Jay Lethal's going to, like, be a thing that holds them back because he has held some other people back in the past. No offense to him. It's not his fault. They just don't use him. And so when you're in a group with Jay Lethal, you just get that label slapped on you for some reason. You get slap nutted right on you, you know? Sucks, but as a person that's been observing it for a few years now, I can't help but observe that he's just,
I know what you mean, yeah,
to kill groups, you know, even though it's not his fault, you know, like, hopefully that doesn't, hopefully those two are both good enough. Fortunately, Johnson hasn't been able to do this in any other fucking groups he was in, but whatever, you know, hopefully they're both good enough that they can just figure it out, you know, but we'll see, you know, but yeah, no, this match was really solid, I thought. And after the match, we get Roderick Strong officially joining the conglomeration, which has been, you know, something we've been building up to for God knows how long at this point. So, yeah, what did you think of this? You know, Roddy in now, dogs call these two out for further matches after. So that's going to continue to be a few, which I'm fine with, because now that Roddy's like fully teaming with, you know, Cassidy, they can obviously put on some pretty crazy matches, I'm sure. I don't know, what do you anything like about this opening match, Charlie? Any thoughts at all?
It's a fun tag team. I'd like to see them going forward to see what they could do. The Lethal Twist was kind of a sick name as well.
Yeah, but I think that was Nigel. I just threw that out there, and I was like, that's actually a pretty good name, Nigel. Not bad, yeah, you know?
I did like the Orange and Roddy finally teaming up, too, and kind of, you know,
yeah, officially this whole thing. Yeah. My theory about him and Roddy actually being friends finally confirmed, you know? Like, yeah,
I'm so down with this.
Yes, they're boys. Of course they're boys. Come on. They travel everywhere together. That's my headcanon. They travel together, even though I'm sure they don't, because AEW, I think, provides travel. But I don't care. They do it together. They travel because they can. The Babes of Wrath won a rematch with the Divine Dominion. So Willow still doesn't care about the TBS championship. Moving on. The Divine Dominion took on some, I called it local talent squared. They won in pretty quick order. You know, Divine Dominion, they look really fucking good. They look like a fucking world beater tag team. Like,
this is
by accident, and it's the greatest thing ever, and I fucking love it. It's kind
of
like how
tell you.
Mega Problems was. They were one of the best teams in that tournament. Yeah. It was out of fucking nowhere. You know what I mean? So it's like,
I'm a really big fan of this Lena Cross.
You know what the common denominator is, Charlie? Megan fucking Bain.
AEW had... clearly, they didn't realize how much gold they struck with her. And with Toni Storm being gone for 9 months, Mercedes currently gone, I think it's Megan Bain's world and we're all just living in it. Let's see what happens.
I say, if they don't hold these titles for like, because I don't know they're going to hold them for like 8 months, right? Let's say they hold them for like a couple months. If Tekla is still champion, you just run that match.
Is that bleeding through the mic at all, by the way?
What, was there something on your end?
Okay. Yeah, there's a fucking vacuum outside my door. I'm just trying
I can hear it a little bit when you're talking.
Okay.
It's not that bad, I don't think.
Gotcha. Now we're almost done here anyways.
Yeah, apologies if y'all can hear the, but you know, we do live in houses with other people in them, so we talked about, oh, is there anything else you wanted to add or about that? But I think they're really, really fucking good, and they're going to be really good, and I think you can easily run Mega Man versus
Tekla. I was a little taken aback by like the girl that looked like she was legit in street clothes. I was like, what the fuck? Did they pull this girl out of the crowd?
It's pretty wild. I mean, what if they actually genuinely, like, I mean, what if like for these shows, because they were both an hour, they were like, well, we're just going to kind of throw them together, and they literally didn't have like a, they had like a plan, but then like maybe this was like in theory a standby match, and they were like, hey, there's this indie wrestler in the crowd, and then one of them, they're totally down to wrestle tonight. We'll give them the daily rate or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Could have happened. I doubt it. They probably just showed up thinking that was some good gear, you know? We talked about Tommaso versus Leo and Swerve versus Kenny Omega video package combined with the MJF hype video. It was a little interesting. I guess because they weren't on these shows, they just threw them all in there, you know?
I wonder if we're going to have flight problems this week.
Oh, because of all the backup at the airports, because of that one being, because I saw something like what you're talking about. Like, there's
TSA
one airport,
doesn't exist right now. So right, like airports
lines
are
way so
backed
long
up
at some airports that they're literally telling people are literally choosing to go to other airports because of the lines being shorter.
You know what? That's probably
those
why we
airports
don't have like anything announced for tomorrow. Other than the Kenny Omega match.
It could be another weird week.
Just gonna have people driving to fucking Canada and taking their flights over.
Probably, unironically, you know,
yeah,
like
right, like geez, I know the pay per views in Canada. I don't know where the show is this week, but they usually start prepping that up, right? Usually,
mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I don't. Yeah, hopefully
it is in Canada. Oh, it's in Minnesota.
I mean, Tony Khan is rich enough; he could afford a private jet, but I don't think he can fly everybody in that private jet. Well, unless it's big enough, I guess. You know, like, so maybe the Khan family buys a jet so they can fly the AW wrestlers to the next show. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
it
looks like
it,
they have
know
a live show in Minnesota and Iowa this week, and then next week they're in Canada. So they're in Canada for 2 weeks after that.
Okay, so if they get through this week, then they should be fine. You know, if everybody can make it, then it should be okay. But if
it's
they can't,
interesting to think about. It's probably why we haven't had stuff announced.
You know what? This is what I always say, though. When this happens, what you have to do, unless there's literally nobody in the back, there's like four people or something, right? Which that has happened to wrestling shows before, right? But unless it's a super bad scenario like that where just nobody gets through, take some of those motherfuckers you haven't been using and put them on TV and just let them cook and see what happens. And yeah, does that create a problem for next week when all your regular people are back? No, it just means that you have something you can pull on later. It just allows you to set things up. And I know it's going to be a little confusing from a TV standpoint, but if it comes to it, you got to do what you got to do, you know, like, so yeah. Our main event of Slam Dunk Sunday was Kodosuke Takeshita, El Clon, and Josh Alexander taking on Místico and Jet Speed, aka Jet Speed, Jet Set Místico, I think is what somebody said. I don't know if that works, but you know, I don't know if Jet Set Rodeo worked either. So, and they said that and they put that on a graphic. So, you know, like, so, you know, fuck me, I guess, you know, but, no, but the you know they did some great high flying stuff here, even a little bit of submission work. The current champions ended up retaining here in like a nice little exciting fun main event end to Slam Dunk Sunday. Picked up the win off the La Mística submission from Místico. Literally, I would ask you if there's anything you want to say about this, but it was about as what you would expect as it would be. It was solid. It was really good. Everybody in it did some good shit. Kinosuke standing out as always because he's Kinosuke Takeshita, doing his throws, doing his great shit, you know. You know, oh, he even did a one-legged Boston crab would be a way different move, I feel like, you know, but yeah. Like a single leg Boston crab, which I got a little bit of torque on. I thought this was solid little end of the Slam Dunk Sunday. I don't know. What did you have anything you wanted to add about this, Charlie? You know,
I love seeing Místico on TV. I like this pairing, trios titles, all the fun. It sucks that Alexander got hurt here, but it was a fun little match for him to end it on. Again, I think Collision was. We used to do like a lot of like which one the week. I mean, Collision beat the shit out of Dynamite this week,
which is crazy because it was split between two shows and there was shit in between it. Well, yeah. Actually, the day between it, you know. So yeah. Like,
so Yeah, I good stuff out of Collision. Fun way to end it. And this was a fun show today.
Yeah, I agree.
Thanks, guys, for popping in and joining us. As of our recording, there's nothing announced for tomorrow other than the Kenny and Swerve match. So keep an eye on your social medias on Wednesday, because I'm sure Tony Khan will be posting tomorrow/today, whenever you're listening, about who is wrestling tonight. But yeah, thank you for joining us, and we will catch you guys on the flip side.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.